Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Murphy Brown returns to the CBS lineup this fall after a 10-year absence. The show still revolves around the title character, a successful independent journalist who breaks television and social norms. In the 1990s, all that took was having a baby outside of marriage, which provoked the Vice President of the United States, Dan Quayle, among others. Here's Quayle in a speech in San Francisco in 1992.
It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice.
He got a lot of blowback for that. Here to talk about the upcoming reboot is NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Eric, did you watch Murphy Brown growing up?
I sure did. I was really drawn in by the way the show talked about topical issues. I was a big Candace Bergen fan, even though I was much younger then. And I really liked the way that she sort of took a stand and seemed to be a modern image of a woman that we weren't seeing on network television all that much. You could tell it was a groundbreaking show when it was airing, and you could tell that they were presenting a kind of female character that we didn't often get to see. And I remember very much at that time having this hunger for television that was more realistic, that was more authentic, that gave voices to the kind of characters that you didn't often see. And so Murphy Brown, sort of clicked on all those cylinders for me.
Yeah, they weren't afraid to explore all kinds of things. Having a baby, by the time she had the baby, most of us who watched the show for all that time, we weren't shocked. But, of course, Dan Quayle was. So people who liked it. Did it have a ripple effect beyond that, though?
Well, I was raised by a single mother, so to hear Dan Quayle sort of come out and somehow imply that those kinds of families weren't real families was insulting. And so to see the show push back against that in a strong and unambiguous way was really wonderful. And it's hard to remember now, but there was quite a bit of a culture war going on back then as well. And there was this sense that people like Dan Quayle and George H.W. Bush were advocating a conservatism that was hampering in some ways to people who were trying to gain new traction in society and a new voice and equal pay and the freedom to make the kind of choices they wanted to make. Now, I can only surmise what kind of effect Murphy Brown might have had on young women who might aspire to have careers or aspire to work in journalism or aspire to make the choice to have a child without being married. But it certainly seemed like she was an inspiration on all those levels and helped. You know, one of the things that I think is important about television is that when you see something on television and you see it in that world, it can help you imagine that it might actually happen. I'm convinced that one reason why people were more comfortable voting for Barack Obama to be our first black president is because we had a show like 24 out there that had an effective, caring, principled black president years before the actual election. And so when I see something like that on Murphy Brown, I say to myself, you know, here's a character that said to American society, you know, it's okay for women to choose to have a child even though they're not married. And if they have a stable home life and they have a great job and they have room in their life for a child, they should be able to do it without having any kind of social stigma attached to it. And I got to believe that show helped push that idea.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the reboot of Murphy Brown. Starts at the end of September. My guest is NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. If you watched Murphy Brown then and are looking forward to watching it now or not, give us a call and tell us why. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Eric, I am one of those people. I was just starting out my career when Murphy Brown came on, and I loved it immensely. But I also love Mary Tyler Moore. I wanted you to kind of compare and contrast it to, you know, the whole Mary Tyler Moore show and what she brought to the table.
Well, you know, Mary Tyler Moore, of course, aired, you know, much earlier. Mm-hmm. So, again, looking back, it may seem as if that character wasn't as revolutionary as it was, as she was.
Right.
But to have a character who was a single woman, a career woman, someone who wasn't overly fixated on getting married and creating a family, someone who created a work family that seemed to fill her needs, and somebody who could be fulfilled in work and could be fulfilled in those kinds of friendships, that was also a groundbreaking mm-hmm. image to bring to television. And so, and also to realize that Mary Tyler Moore, through her production company, MTM, was also involved as a producer on the show and also controlled the creative direction of the show. And then so to come to Murphy Brown, that show was created by Diane English, a female producer, and certainly her and Candice Bergen had a tremendous voice in the direction of that show and what kind of images got presented. What's interesting is I was reading a book about female showrunners, and in that book it talked about Murphy Brown and how Diane English wrote the pilot for Murphy Brown right before there was a writer strike in Hollywood. And the network, CBS, reportedly was nervous about centering a show on a middle-aged woman who was just out of rehab, which is what you know, was the premise of Murphy Brown. But because there was a writer strike right after the pilot was written, they couldn't change it. They had to film it the way it was. And so one reason why we got such a groundbreaking character in Murphy Brown is that Diane English was able to create that pilot the way she wanted to, and then a writer strike made it impossible for the network to change the script. So sometimes there are happy accidents in Hollywood that wind up giving us these groundbreaking characterizations.
Right. Well, you talk about her getting out of rehab. There's so many things about it that when you look back, I, to prepare for this, went back and watched all kinds of Murphy Brown last night and had a blast doing it. It stood the test of time.
Well, and one of the ironies of Murphy Brown is that even though it was a popular series, it's not really available on streaming, and it doesn't it isn't rerun very much. So so it doesn't have the kind of visibility that a show like Friends has gotten, or Seinfeld, that has played a lot in reruns and is also available on streaming services like Netflix. So I think one of the unknowns about CBS reviving Murphy Brown is that there is an entire generation that doesn't have any idea what the show's about because they've never really seen it presented to them. And so there might be some question about, you know, will an audience show up? Mm-hmm. Will a much younger audience remember it? And once they start doing the show, if it feels like the old show, mm-hmm. will it feel sort of out of step? They have a lot of challenges in doing this new version.
What's the calculus when it comes to doing reruns? Why hasn't Murphy Brown, why can't I get it on Netflix?
Well, you know, I from what I've heard, it's a weird situation where even though CBS presented the show, there's another studio that owns the rerun rights to it, and they haven't necessarily moved to get it on streaming. A lot of times when popular TV shows are not available through streaming, it's something like that. There may be several different entities that own the show, and maybe they can't agree on a deal to put it on a streaming service or put it on DVDs, or maybe people feel that it won't be profitable. I think the first season of Murphy Brown was made available on DVD and maybe didn't do well. So So all of those things can come together to make it hard to see a show sometimes. And when it comes to deciding whether or not to do a reboot, often to the networks, the question is, do they own the intellectual property or the IP? So that's why we're seeing CBS not only do Murphy Brown, but they're rebooting Magnum P.I. They already rebooted MacGyver and Hawaii Five-O and SWAT. These are all shows that were big hits for them in the 70s and some time ago. And they own the intellectual property rights to redo it. And so it makes sense for them. It's almost like having a great classic car sitting in your garage that maybe needs a new paint job and a new engine, and so you do the work and then you roll it out and see if it can be a success on the streets again, and so that's what we're seeing with Murphy Brown and Magnum PI this fall.
In a CBS First Look trailer, the cast of Murphy Brown explains or tries to explain why now they're coming back. Let's listen.
Take on this crazy new world of alternative facts and fake news. It's our civic duty. And besides, you missed us. You know you did.
That is the lead character, of course. She is... has always been sort of in your face, and she's talking about the animosity toward media in today's world. It looks like back in the day, it was the whole conflict between traditional Walter Cronkite news and the entertainment of news or news as entertainment coming on back then, and now it looks like they're going to run headlong into the whole animosity issue.
Yeah, Murphy Brown was uniquely positioned to sort of talk about how news was being, how traditional news values were being eroded by this entertainment prerogative, this idea that you could, figure out a way to present news to people in a way that would make them watch it more often, and usually that meant dumbing it down, and presenting it in a way that might not be as ethical or as serious as a serious journalist like Murphy Brown might want to do. Now, of course, the question is all about partisanship. It's all about ideologically focused news outlets. It's all about trust and the public's falling trust in news outlets across the board. And this idea of what do we do when we're in a country where Americans can't even agree on basic facts, the basic facts of news stories. I mean, today we have the news media talking about Donald Trump, our president, not accepting a scientific study that showed that almost 3,000 people were killed in the aftermath of Hurricane Irma hitting Puerto Rico. And so when you have a situation like that where the president, who has a significant following in America, suddenly says that a scientific study is inaccurate based on no evidence, and a lot of people believe him, then what does that say for news outlets that are trying to report responsibly on the story, but also trying to point out the flaws in the president's logic? So to have a program like Murphy Brown come along where they're going to try and talk about that. Murphy, in this new version, is going to be an anchor at a cable news channel that I think is going to be an allegory to CNN, and she's going to be competing against her son, who works for a conservative news channel, which I think is going to be cast in the mold of Fox News. And so we're going to get at these issues of, old school journalism versus new school political journalism, ideological combat, and the whole fake news notion. What does fake news mean, and what does it mean when different people use it? And so it seems like it's rich territory for a character like Murphy Brown, who's always been no-nonsense, has always called out hypocrisy, has always been rooted in old-school journalism values, and has always kind of been rooted in this old-school liberalism that's about, allowing, diversity, allowing people to follow their freedoms and inequality. So it'll be interesting to see how all of this is sort of expressed in a modern comedic environment.
Eric Deggans, do you like it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen any?
Nobody's seen it. Nobody's seen it except the people who are working on the show.
Oh, all right.
I've been told by CBS that critics are going to get an early look at it. I got to admit, it worries me a bit because most of the shows that are debuting this fall, we TV critics got a look at them, back in May.
Right.
Now, Murphy Brown didn't really start filming, it started filming, I think, in August was the first. The first Friday in August may have been the first taping. So they haven't been filming for very long. You know, they do it like a play. They
Well, it's going to be very topical, too, right?
The idea is that it's going to be topical, and also that's how sitcoms kind of work. You know, they film them in front of a live audience, mm-hmm. and they get into this rhythm where they're cranking out an episode just about every week. So, but by now they should have several in the can, and we should be able to get a look at the first one. I'm hoping they're going to make it available to critics before it debuts. If they don't, mm-hmm. I think that might be a bad sign because they know it's a highly anticipated show, mm-hmm. and if the episode was really good, the buzz would certainly help them. So the fact that critics haven't seen it yet is something that worries me.
Could it be done without Candace Bergen?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Agreed.
It wouldn't be Murphy Brown.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
But it's interesting. ABC is going to try to do something this fall where they do a show called The Conners. They're going to essentially do Roseanne without Roseanne.
Yeah.
You know, they revived the show earlier this year. It did really well. Star Roseanne Barr put out a tweet that was racist. ABC dropped the show and fired her, and then worked out a deal where they could bring back the show without her. Without Roseanne Barr. So we'll see whether a signature show can come back, a revival can come back without the star that was the signature. But I think with Murphy Brown in particular, already we've said that this show has a lot of challenges. The fact that it hasn't been in reruns, the fact mm-hmm. that, there's a whole generation that doesn't know much about it, the fact that, most of the people who worked on the show didn't really go on to bigger careers mm-hmm. after the show was on. So, you know, in the case of Roseanne, you know, Laurie Metcalf and John Goodman and right. Sarah Gilbert all went on to have greater success in show business after Roseanne. Nobody from Murphy Brown really did that I can remember. So it already has all these hurdles. You can't try and do Murphy Brown without Candace Bergen. So fortunately, they don't have to. So it'll mm-hmm. be interesting to see if they've gotten sharper or if they're going to struggle.
Eric Duggins, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Duggins, NPR TV critic. Moving on, we're going to continue our conversation about Murphy Brown and some of the people that she's influenced over time. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. About 30 years ago, Murphy Brown hit the screen. On September 27th of this year, it's going to debut again. The late 80s hit TV show featured a leading woman whose independence, intelligence, and wit spoke to the audience. In the show's pilot, Brown returns to work after spending a month in rehab. When she arrives in the office, she has a new boss, Miles Silverberg. He's a young executive producer who used to work in public television. Let's hear her first conversation.
Ben, do you know who the Shirelles are?
Excuse me?
The Shirelles? The Ronettes? The Delphonics?
It's only my second day.
How old are you?
25.
What's your background?
Master's degree from Harvard Business School.
Working background.
3 years in public television.
It's getting worse.
Here by phone to discuss the hit TV show and its reboot, director of image of the journalist in popular culture at USC Annenberg, Joe Saltzman. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Do you remember Murphy Brown?
Boy, do I remember Murphy Brown. I can't believe it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
She was the primary image of the journalist in the 1990s because she was on every week and people knew her. And she interacted with real-life journalists and politicians, so people were not always sure if she wasn't a real journalist.
Also joining us by phone is longtime Columbus broadcast journalist and anchor, television anchor, Colleen Marshall. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
You're a female journalist. You started your career in the 80s, as did I. What did Murphy Brown mean to you?
You know, I adored Murphy Brown because she would say the things that so many of us were thinking, and she had the power to say them. I often thought of her as being kind of the next level of Mary Tyler Moore, because Mary Tyler Moore, if you remember, came on the scene and she was the first one to say women should be paid as much as men. Well, Murphy Brown would be a woman who demanded to be paid as much as men. And I think she was a cultural icon.
And she was also funny and strong and
yes.
controversial. She wasn't afraid of any of it.
She really wasn't. I mean, remember the big scandal or the big, and your other guest mentioned it, it did seem that she was a real journalist.
Yeah.
When she became a single mother, the people who showed up at her bridal shower or at the baby shower were, it was really Katie Couric
right.
and Faith Daniels and other journalists. And she seemed so real that Dan Quayle made a point of saying to a group of, I think it was a family conference, that Murphy Brown was discounting the importance of men in families. And it seemed as if he didn't say Candace Bergen. He said Murphy Brown, like she was a real person.
Right. It was a very timely show, Joe Saltzman. It played off of issues of the day. How much did that matter?
I think it mattered a lot. What I found fascinating is you just mentioned Dan Quayle. It was a real-life vice president making a comment about a fictional character. But what they did, which was brilliant, they used it in several episodes. And you'll see Murphy Brown and Frank sitting in her room, and they'll cut to the TV set where the real Dan Quayle is making that statement, and the fictional Murphy Brown and Frank are responding to it.
Right.
And in the next episode, Miles walks in with tons of newspaper headlines, which were real,
yeah.
on this controversy. So you had that blurring of the line of a real-life politician complaining about a fictional character's impact on women. And then you had it in the series, and it was hard to distinguish what was real and what wasn't.
You know, we played the cut at the beginning. Let's replay it again. This is then-Vice President Dan Quayle in 1992.
It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice.
It is kind of crazy, Colleen Marshall. Did you guys talk about it? You were in broadcast. I was in newspapers. It was a little bit different paradigm. But did you guys talk about it at work? Was it water cooler conversation?
Not only did we talk about it at work, but if I remember correctly, I think that even became part of the news cycle. We talked about it on the air because this was the vice president of the United States making a condemnation of a fictional character at a real life event. And I think, if I recall correctly, and maybe you do have a different recollection of this, but I think what happened was it became a talking point about abortion, because people were saying, you know, here's this conservative vice president saying, we don't want this woman being a single parent, and at the same time opposing abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And so it did become part of the real news cycle, because it was one of those cultural shifts that people were talking about actively at that time. And it was a remarkable talking point, not just for journalists, but there were editorials about it there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was a program that really did engage people in through a fictional character into the real life issues of the day. It was a remarkably written show to be able to carry that off and make you believe that she was that real.
Joe Saltzman, is there any indication that they kind of had to scrap the prepared show and just move with this when they strike while the iron was hot?
Well, no, I don't think so, because they constantly were up to date.
Okay.
I remember one wonderful, they would always make fun of the fact that they weren't real. And there was a great scene, I remember, with Miles yelling at Murphy, and he said, "Let me remind you about something, Murphy. This is not a job. This is a job, not make-believe. We're not doing the Mary Tyler Moore show here.
Yeah.
There's no audience laughing at every cute little thing you say. This is the real world. So when I tell you you're doing a story, you don't just say, oh, Mr. Grant, I don't want to. You do it." And, I mean, this was taking another fictional character and saying, we're not like that. We're real. You have to act like a real journalist, not like a fictional journalist.
And she was a female journalist in a way pre-day. I mean, this was more visionary just on that score alone, Colleen.
You know, it was. And at that time, I got to Channel 4, I guess it would have been in 1984. And at that time, women like me who wanted to do hard news, who wanted to do politics, who didn't necessarily want to do the daycare stories, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but it just wasn't my, you know, my forte. She was doing that. And it wasn't just that she was, this fictional character was reporting on it, the important topics of the day. She really was kind of running the show.
Yeah.
She wasn't the boss, but you saw her in a very powerful way, and her voice had an impact on the decisions that were being made in that fictional newsroom. And how many times did we see her fire her receptionist?
Yeah, I know.
You know, she had power. She was a boss. She wasn't, and I loved Mary Tyler Moore show.
So did I.
But Mary Tyler Moore was kind of this meek woman trying to make her way in a man's world. Murphy Brown was a woman who was making it a woman's world, and that was the difference.
You know, Joe Saltzman, we often talk about how All the President's Men, the whole Watergate controversy and scandal inspired so many people into the world of journalism and into the newsrooms of America. And I wonder if there wasn't similarly an influence from Murphy Brown.
Well, that's hard to say, because it's hard to pinpoint that. Like, All the President's Men was an event where they could actually show statistically that more kids were going into journalism school. But I do know that women of the period, because I was teaching at the time, did use Murphy Brown as a great example. You know, the image of the female journalist in popular culture is a very interesting one, because it was one of the few professions where a woman could be independent. And in many films, the woman would be increasingly independent for 90% of the film. They would be out scooping the male reporters. They would be terrific journalists. In fact, the greatest compliment you could give a female journalist in most films is for the editor to say, "Hey, you're a hell of a newspaper man." That would be the ultimate compliment.
Right.
But in the last 10% of that film, the strong women had to become a typical woman of the period, which means they had to find the available man. They'd have to get married at the end of the film, or look like they were going to get married and become a mother and a housewife, because that's what the audience would accept. The women, even the women in the audience, would not accept that strong an image of a woman unless at the end the woman would do what they felt a woman should do, which is to be a good wife and have a family and take care of the house.
Colleen Marshall, that there's been a lot of talk about this show. No one has seen any excerpts from it. There have been some pre-trailers coming out, though, about why they needed to come back. And she's talked about why she needed to come back because of the whole fake news issue. What are your expectations? What are you hoping to see?
Well, I hope that they have the writers, the writing staff at the level that they had back then, because it probably was one of the best written series on television at the time, really one of the best of all time, I believe. They had phenomenal writers, and they really were good at sticking, you know, capitalizing on whatever was going on in the news of the day. That show was fresh all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as if they were telling us last year's news. They really did seem to stay on top of the issues of the day and the politics of the day. So my hope is that it will be as well written as it was before. But, you know, there are so many issues. And I read an interview with Candace Bergen talking about the decision to come back. I mean, a lot of shows are being rebooted now.
Mm-hmm.
But she specifically said it was because of what's going on and because of the claims of fake news and that the journalists are the enemies of the people. And I think they're probably going to tackle that head on. And I expect to see that very early in this show, taking on these claims that somehow journalists have become, the enemies of the people. And there's, you know, in the journalism field right now, there's a lot of resentment for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because those of us who went into it, because I was a Watergate baby,
yeah, me too.
I loved Watergate, and it certainly influenced my career choice. We looked at journalists back then as being people who serve the people, that our profession was there to, you know, hold the powerful accountable, that we would comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. All of those phrases that came out of that time period, I think it's hurtful now to see us being described as someone who goes into anything that we cover with an agenda. And I hope that this show does a good job of poking holes at that.
Colleen Marshall, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Ann. Nice talking to you again.
Colleen Marshall, longtime Columbus broadcast journalist, anchor on Channel 4. Also staying with us, Joe Saltzman, director of the Image of the Journalist and Popular Culture at USC Annenberg. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. If you recognize that music, you were a fan of Murphy Brown. It ran for 10 years on CBS in the late 80s, early 90s. And at the end of this month, we'll reboot on CBS again after a 10-year absence. The show made a splash in the late 80s. Its main character, Murphy Brown, was a fiercely independent female journalist. She was great at her job, and she didn't take any unfair criticism. Famously, in the series, she chose to become a single mother. This choice drew criticism from the Vice President of the United States, then Dan Quayle. And on cue, Murphy Brown, played by Candace Bergen, responded.
These are difficult times for our country, and in searching for the causes of our social ills, we could choose to blame the media, or the Congress, or an administration that's been in power for 12 years, or we could blame me.
Still makes me laugh. Still with us by phone is director of the Image of the Journalist and Popular Culture at USC Annenberg, Joe Saltzman. Thanks again, Joe, for joining us.
My pleasure.
And also joining us now is Ohio State scholar Maggie Jackson. She studies the work of feminist perspectives in critical media studies. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Maggie, in the television show, Murphy's choice to become a single mother became a huge controversy, but we see single fathers in television shows all the time, and back then, too. What made her choice significant at the time, do you think?
You know, it's very interesting for me because you were talking to Eric a little bit earlier,
Eric
and he mentioned
NPR TV critic, yeah.
Right, and he mentioned that there's this entire generation of people who really have no idea the impact that Murphy Brown had on our lives and our television consumption, that kind of thing. I happen to be one of those people. The show started the year I was born, so I have kind of been doing a crash course in it, and it's been fascinating to look back and see all that we owe Murphy Brown. Especially having to do with like the way that single parent families are portrayed in television now, the way that the kind of family that she alludes to that come in all shapes and sizes, either through circumstance or choice, are everywhere in our television landscape now. And I think having a character like Murphy Brown, who is, as we've been saying, forceful and ready to make the world her own, also make this choice that tends to, or tended to during the conversation at the time, take women out of the workforce. To have her insist upon both definitely made a difference to what is possible for us to imagine in television, even, you know, 30 years later.
And, you know, Joe Saltzman, we're talking a lot right now about how women are permitted to behave, how they're permitted to express themselves, given the Serena Williams outburst at the tennis match. That's been a big thing right now. Murphy Brown had no compunction about having a snit fit when something bugged her, and she always made it look really good.
Well, she was one of the few characters on television who really talked that way and talked so straight about issues. That was very rare, even in the 1990s, to have a character like Murphy Brown. She was quite effective in doing that, and it's hard to know if that kind of character is going to work today. One of the problems I have is many of my students were born in the 21st century. They don't even know who Murphy Brown is. I mm-hmm. wonder how that's going to react. Of course, most of my students don't watch television. They only watch their smartphones. So if Murphy Brown says something interesting and it's picked up by YouTube mm-hmm. and the kids start watching it, that might be very helpful in creating a hit for Murphy Brown this time around. But, you know, the original Murphy Brown was never that big a success. And it never was in reruns, and the DVD set was only bought by certain people, so I'm not sure that it had even that much popularity then, but it was a different era.
Was it sort of a cult following then, or what? Because it lasted for 10 years.
Yeah, but you know what? If you really look at the history of Murphy Brown, the first few years, it was almost every year, is it going to be renewed? Is it going to be renewed? Huh. And I think you're right. It did last 10 years, but in those years, they gave a series a chance. And sometimes the network even kept a series on that wasn't doing that well in the public ratings until much later, 5-6 years later.
John in Sunbury, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Yeah, I see a basic problem with this. I don't think there's a problem with renewing a program with the same character, but the remakes, for example, this fall, I think there's a Magnum coming out,
right.
But it doesn't have Tom Selleck in it. And
right.
I think remakes are bad, but I was interested in the gentleman's comment regarding new generation, because if you've never seen the original, then you may like it. But if you compare it to the old one and you're kind of in a fashion of liking that, that's the whole difference. So part of it, it just has to do with your age of your viewing audience.
Yeah. Go ahead, Maggie Jackson.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot, John, about what this recent spate of reboots from especially the 80s, sometimes the 70s, we had MacGyver
yeah,
a little while ago.
Yeah, they're going to do that one as well.
Yeah, I think it's still around. And this is definitely on networks, but it's also on the streaming services. We have One Day at a Time, which is doing very well on Netflix. And something as recent as Gilmore Girls, which, speaking of single mothers and television.
Right.
But I find it very interesting as a person who, as you said, has never really had experience with these things before. Why is it that it's this era that we continue to go back to, especially, I think, on networks?
Because all the baby boomers are
right.
getting ready to retire and sitting home and want something to watch. I don't know. Joe Saltzman, what do you think?
I'm not real sure why they're bringing it back, except it makes financial sense. They own the property. It doesn't cost that much to reboot it. And they may hit a home run like they have with Roseanne before the controversy and with other shows. The Will and Grace show, I can't remember the name of it offhand, but that's doing
Will and Grace.
Will and Grace,
yeah
right. that's doing very well. And so if you hit that, you make a lot of money because there's no startup cost. You have it. You own it. You own the intellectual rights to that property. So it makes sense to reboot. And if you hit it big, it can be a big success.
Hmm. John, thanks for that call. I want to turn to Fred now in Columbus. You're on the air. Fred, hi.
So is the mark of success of a reboot of Murphy Brown whether or not they can go Trump into tweeting about it?
that's a really good question. What do you think, Maggie Jackson?
Watching that Dan Quayle clip was...
And knowing what it did for the program.
Absolutely stunning to me, because it is a little bit... A lot of the things that I've seen in this show, having done a crash course in it recently, are just depressingly relevant, including this sort of truth is stranger than fiction,
yeah.
journalistic intercourse with the fictional world and like the world of fake news or what have you. And so I definitely think that I can't imagine in that writer's room that's not on a wall somewhere.
Get the president to tweet about
yeah.
it. you know, my sense about Murphy Brown wasn't that they were trying to poke a stick at the administration per se. It was more at institutions of government and not a particular. Do you think, Joe Saltzman, they have the leeway to get a little bit more personal here?
I don't know. I hope not, frankly, because I think that would not do the show much good. I hope they'll do it on an institutional basis. One of the great things about the original Murphy Brown is they were really kind of friendly with the politicians, even the ones that were that would hate Murphy Brown and what she stood for. Gingrich showed up, and there was a mutual respect and civility between all the characters and the real-life journalists and politicians. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful press conference where George Bush reacts to Murphy Brown pushing reporters aside to get a front-row seat to ask some questions. But it was friendly. It wasn't vicious. It wasn't angry. It wasn't the kind of stuff we see now on television and we see in our politics and our journalism, this lack of civility. And I think Murphy Brown, if she goes that route, will be a failure. I think if she keeps it civil, if she gives mutual respect for everybody, I think it'll be a much more successful show, and I think the points they make will be more relevant.
But she never suffered fools gladly, Maggie Jackson. What about that?
Well, it's interesting what you're saying, Joe. In that regard, it seems like Parks and Recreation owns a tremendous debt to Murphy Brown as far as congenial relationships with politicians on both sides of the aisle. There are plenty of really good cameos by politicians
That's
in that
right.
show, including Newt Gingrich, including the late John McCain, who Leslie Knope certainly would not have had a whole lot in common with politically. And so it's interesting to note that even in all of these other workplace comedies that come after it that aren't set within a journalistic environment, but rather in another institutional environment that it's easy to critique, which is local government, that we have all of these kind of parallels and similarities that come across.
You know, Colleen Marshall drilled down into the issue of the allegations of fake news and the characterization of news gathering organizations that's being disparaged so much by the Trump administration and by the president. Joe Saltzman, what could a Murphy Brown do that, say, the newsroom on HBO didn't achieve?
Very interesting question, because one thing I worry about is what's going on in politics today is so absurd, and some of the things the president tweets and other people say in Congress just are so absurd, it's hard to be sarcastic about it. It's hard to make humor out of it. Colbert tries, The Daily Show tries, Suzanne B. tries, John Oliver tries, but you know, it's very difficult to make fun of something that's so absurd. And I'm a bit worried Murphy Brown may have that problem in being relevant and making statements that we don't already know or already hear on other shows. She isn't alone anymore. There are so many shows on TV making fun of this situation, commenting on the situation in sarcastic ways. I'm just a little bit worried she may not be as relevant today as she was then.
What do you think, Maggie?
I think people like Samantha Bee and John Oliver and Seth Meyers, Colbert, many of whom came out of The Daily Show, many of whom also came out of SNL, speak a little bit to what you were talking about. Again, earlier, I alluded to earlier in the show, talking about kind of infotainment and the clash of entertainment.
Which was the clash back in the 80s and 90s, right?
And the clash between information, news gathering, and entertainment. How do you get people to watch it? It seems that we've kind of come to a point at which those things have sort of collided in these really surreal ways that I don't think Murphy Brown could have necessarily anticipated, including the fact that the president of the United States is a former reality television star. And so it is very interesting to consider all of the ways in which the show couldn't necessarily have anticipated the wackiness of our current political environment, perhaps, and yet has made way for some of the really kind of interesting and provocative journalism that is happening in entertainment media right now.
We talked earlier with Eric Deggan, NPR TV critic Deggans, about he pointed out how interestingly the Murphy Brown writers were able to poke fun at themselves in a way, or at the show itself, making fun and saying, you know, this isn't Mary Tyler Moore. There isn't a laugh, you know, sequence coming up after everything you say, blah, blah, blah. I'm wondering if there's a way, and I think that Eric brought this up, and maybe Joe Saltzman, you did too, or maybe everyone has. It's going to go to the writing. It's going to go so much heavily depend on the writers, and it makes you wonder what kind of research they're doing, Joe Saltzman, to do this.
I think that they always keep up with current events. My son, for example, was executive producer of Murphy Brown for 3 years.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he loved the show, of course, because he was a journalism major in school and knew a lot about journalism. And they did a lot of research, and they did a lot of looking at headlines and a lot of checking with current events and watching TV constantly to find new ideas and new ways of tackling it. And I think the same thing is going on now. I think the staff Diane has put together probably is very much involved in journalism and current events and are doing, probably they have books of stuff that they want to cover on the show. They do a lot of great research, and I agree with your other guests. That was extremely well written, and I think that's the key. If it's well written and people come to it, it's going to be successful.
Yeah, Maggie?
My hope is that in the reboot and in the writing that we don't rely on kind of a little bit of what I saw in the trailer, which is you missed us, what happened to the good old days, which is rhetoric that I think if not carefully managed can easily slide all the way into Make America Great Again. And so it's interesting for me to watch this thing that like is sort of progressively minded or at least critically minded and very overtly so in the trailer, using some of the same kind of rhetorical strategies that we see other places. And so I really hope that what you say, Joe, is true and that the writing is critical and incisive and to the point and not necessarily relying on the nostalgia that a reboot might otherwise belie.
Yeah, because no matter what, it's moved forward. Joe Saltzman, do you think this could be done with anyone other than Katniss Bergen?
Oh, absolutely not. She is incredible. She made Murphy Brown. I couldn't imagine one without the other. I mean, it'd be impossible. She was an extraordinary actress. People don't remember that. And she came into this without much comedy experience.
Yes.
And she was, that's another thing that I love about Murphy Brown. I loved it about the Mary Tyler Moore Show. You had actors playing comedy. Ed Asner may be the greatest actor playing comedy I've ever seen. And I put Murphy Brown, Candace Bergen in the same category. And they make it much funnier because they're really acting true to the character. They're not just trying to make jokes.
Right. Maggie?
My first recollection of Candace Bergen came in the Sandra Bullock movie, Miss Congeniality, where she has a really fascinating kind of commentary, like a meta commentary almost on the character of Murphy Brown, where you're kind of dealing with this post-feminist idea, this third wave feminist idea of like, what is a woman, what is femininity, and what place does it have in the ambitious workplace. And so, although I did not know Murphy Brown, I was informed by Candace Bergen a lot in that performance and subsequent performances.
And her role, of course, the recurring role in Sex and the City as the Vogue editor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Enid, I think.
Enid. Enid, what a word. What a name. we will continue. Well, we have to call it a day, but I can't wait to see the show. And Joe Saltzman, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you.
Joe Saltzman, Director of the Image of the Journalist and Popular Culture at USC Annenberg, and Maggie Jackson, Ohio State University scholar studying feminism and media. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me back.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.